Welcome to the very first episode of the All Clear to Travel podcast. I'm Gary Nelson, Head of Corporate Affairs at All Clear. In this brand new podcast, we'll be talking to industry experts and people involved in travel to get their perspectives on some of the major issues shaping the travel insurance industry today. This week, we're going to be looking at All Clear's research on non-disclosure. We'll explore why this happens, the risk involved, and how common misunderstandings can leave holidaymakers vulnerable when things go wrong. We have a very special guest who will discuss how consumers and the industry can work together to ensure that they can better understand travel insurance, get the right cover to meet their needs, and avoid surprises. I'm joined by Graham Trugill, Chief Executive of the British Insurers Brokers Association, a strong advocate for improving clarity, access, and confidence across the insurance industry. Warm welcome, Graham. It's great to have you here.
Hello, Gary. Great to be here.
Well, thank you for taking part in the first of our exciting new episodes to bring light onto the insurance industry, particularly the travel insurance industry. But before I go into that detail, you've been working pretty much all your working life in the broking industry, now Chief Exec of the British Insurance Brokers Association, which is great news. What was your kind of attraction to the industry, should I say, and where do you see it going?
Well, my route in, I think both, well, my grandfather worked in insurance, and so there's a little bit of family history there. But actually, when I was sort of a teenager, I did my A-levels, and the day I finished my A-levels, I thought, well, I need to get, you know, a summer job or something to do and get some money. And my friend, his dad sort of managed a farm. So we just went on this farm as teenagers, and we started to, you know, pick strawberries or thin apples or cut cabbages or whatever it was. But the thing is, you got absolutely sunburnt to a crisp on some days and then frozen solid on other days and battered by the wind and everything else. And I thought, you know what? I think I want an office job like my granddad. and so basically the day I finished my A-levels, I applied for two jobs. I just opened the local paper. There's a job at the TSB Bank in Whitstable, and there was a job at insurance broker in Canterbury. And I thought, well, they look like good professional careers, you know, solid direction for me. So at the insurance broker interview, they offered me the job there and then, literally a day after my A-levels, and sort of the rest is history. So selling personal lines insurance, including travel insurance. I think I was amazed that for about £20, you could get a travel insurance policy that covered 25 different heads of cover, from, you know, medical expenses to baggage to loss of your passport, so many different things. And it was a really interesting career. And I carried on studies. I did some Open University MBA in management, and I did my CII studies, which I, you know, have carried on all the way eventually to FCII fellowship. And I've really enjoyed the experience. I think insurance is all about protecting people and helping them if the worst happens. And I like to, you know, to help people at the end of the day. So it's quite a rewarding thing to do.
Yeah, it's a fascinating insight into kind of this decision making that comes there. But British Insurance Brokers Association, clearly with those people within the trade and who are members of the association, know all about it. But it's perhaps one of those brands where the general public are not so familiar with it. So give us a little bit more of an insight into kind of what the remit is and kind of where you, what your role is in terms of kind of the whole of the industry, so to speak.
So we represent over 1,800 insurance broker firms, and there's about 100,000 people work in those firms out of something like 2,650 offices across the UK. So this is a big global brokers in membership. It's national chains, it's small regional brokers, it's specialists like All Clear, it's independent, you know, one-man band, so to speak. So it's a wide church that we represent. And my job is to, I guess I'm in the change business, so I'm there to make the good changes happen, but to stop the bad changes happen. And I always look at it like we're a trade association, and I'm here to help members trade at the end of the day. So that means representing members to government. So that might be the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office on travel insurance issues, which we go to meetings with you regularly to see them. It might be the regulator. I'm sure you remember when ICOB 6A.4 was introduced, so introducing the travel medical directory. So important points on regulation. It's also the press, the BBC, the public perception. So when that Icelandic volcano went off, we had the BBC on the phone. We had 10 Downing Street. We had the ombudsman, you know, is it covered? Isn't it covered? What do people do? What's your advice? And, you know, I think the world we live in today, there's always something going on that you think, well, is the travel insurance going to cover that or not? So we represent members, and I think it's an important job that we do to make sure people appreciate the value of insurance, the value of advice from a broker, and how they can get suitable cover, competitive rates, and support if they've had a claim. So and we have a pretty good sized conference as well, which you exhibit at, 9,907 people this year. So yeah, there's a, it's a bit like painting the Golden Gate Bridge at Bieber. You know, you start with our, we're launching manifesto at the start of the year in the Houses of Parliament with all the things we want to do. And then, you know, as you progress towards the end of it, you have to actually go back, because there's so many more new things that come on our plate that we have to do. But that's you know, the changing world that we're in, and why why there is a Bieber to represent insurance brokers.
Yeah, yeah, and you do a great job on that as well. And you know, there's lots of common assumptions about travel insurance. To a certain extent, what worries you a bit is that there seems to be still that mistrust. Perceptions are that, you know, travel insurance isn't there per se to pay out claims, when we know it absolutely is. You know, what's going on here in the public perception of awareness and this sort of slight concern around transparency, ease of answer of questions? What's your view on that? Has it become more complex since the web's come along, for example?
I think you get lots of consumer bodies. You get, you know, friendly titled BBC shows like Rip Off Britain, and they look sometimes for the bad. The press rarely report the good news, do they? I was with Clive Murray, our conference host, and I think I was doing a bit of research, and pretty much every BBC News at 10 that he presented was a negative story. But then there was one good story about where those astronauts came back to Earth, and the dolphins sort of welcomed them and circled their capsule, and they'd been overdue by quite a long time, several months. And I think it's easy for everyone to take a bad take on travel insurance. But let me give you some stats, okay? There's 22 million travel policies sold in a year, and there are 4,000 odd complaints. I think it's 4,466 complaints. That is 0.02% of policies have a complaint. So in my view, travel insurance is incredible value. It offers wide cover. It's one of the most vital of insurance policies, because if you are stranded abroad, you're taken into a hospital, particularly like America, for example, where those costs can be astronomical. So I think we've got a job to do to actually go on those TV shows, those radio shows, speak to those journalists in the newspapers and say that travel insurance is a cause for good. We protect people. It's you know, it's sensibly priced, and to make those, I think, heart and minds see the good side of travel insurance. So we've just launched a new campaign, Bend the Broker, and it's all about the benefits that a broker can bring, how they understand your needs, how they have a choice of a range of insurers that's going to be suitable to you, the advice that they can give, the help in a claim. And that's run across a lot of platforms, and we aim to reach 33 million people. So it's been on Sky TV, Sky Sports, Sky Cinema. It's been on radio like TalkSport. We've had podcasts, all the national newspapers, and now we're doing Facebook and Instagram. So our aim is to just raise awareness of the value of an insurance broker. And if you're going to get travel insurance, then you need to have that advice from a broker, because they need to tell you things like you have to disclose your pre-existing medical conditions. And I think that probably is the one area where there perhaps is the most press criticism, where somebody hasn't disclosed it, and then there may be a rejected claim and someone might be abroad. So I think there's a responsibility on everybody, and that's not just the industry, that is the BBC, and that is the newspapers and all the other channels and media outlets there, to explain to people, whatever your medical condition is, make sure you disclose it. Now, it might be something not too serious. I'm a runner like you, a bit sporty, and I've just gone and torn a ligament in my leg. Do I tell my travel insurer when I go on holiday this summer? Probably should, just in case I get some swelling or something and there's a complication. So I think if in doubt, just disclose it to your insurance broker is the golden rule. And in many cases, there won't even be an additional premium or a higher excess. They'll just waive it on and they'll say that's absolutely fine. But if it is something more serious, then they can actually give you advice. So, you know, if you're going to a far-flung tropical destination, they will talk to you about, you know, finding out where the nearest medical facility is, taking your prescriptions with you in case you lose your medication. All this advice that the broker can give you, the extra support is invaluable. So, you know, this podcast is a really good idea. And I think we've got some important stories to tell to the public.
Yeah, I think that's partly the issue, partly the problem. There's this confusion around what do I need to declare? You know, the example you've given is a great, great example. People have a cough and a sneeze and perhaps go to the doctors and, you know, it's a mild form of flu or a heavy cold. You know, do I need to declare that? And there is this confusion. In the vast majority of cases, if you're unclear, you're unsure, you're quite right. I think the thing is always worth a phone call or an inquiry just to say this has happened. Do I need to declare it?
And also, if you can't remember, I found the NHS app is really useful for listing all the times you've been to the doctor and what those conditions are.
So our own research that we conducted recently is telling us that people generally are finding it, that it's not clear enough on the website and that they need far more perhaps notifications or warnings that they're they're not declaring all that they should do. What's your view on that? Because we have seen this kind of move to the web, where everybody's kind of, if the web went down, everybody would be lost in terms of what to do. So
I think as human interaction has reduced in the sale of insurance, then the ability to discuss these points with the client has reduced as well. So I think websites do need to have warnings in, you know, block capital letters. You must disclose your pre-existing medical conditions. But I think people, they're always in a hurry these days, and they might go online and they just click and there's all the bump to read. What they need to know is, what do I need to tell you? What am I covered for? What am I not covered for? What do I do if something happens? Who do I call? Where's that number? And so, from my perspective, maybe do your initial search on the web, but then it's always healthy to, to go and have a chat with Gary from All Clear or whoever it might be, and basically say, any questions that they might have, and that can make sure that there's a higher chance of having your claim paid ultimately.
And there's a very good source for information, of course, is through your Fine Insurance Service and obviously the Travel Director as well. There's a lot of discussion around suitability of cover and availability of a cover. You and I have been heavily involved in access to insurance committees over quite a few years now. And have you seen an improvement in that area? I mean, obviously, Bieber's own directory is very much to the forefront of that.
So signposting is my thing. I absolutely loved it. We first started a first signposting agreement on older people seeking travel and motor insurance back in, I think it was about 2012, with Theresa May at the time when she was the Minister for Equalities. And Bieber takes a lot of inquiries from the public, from the Fine Insurance Service. We have a lot of media inquiries when people are having difficulty accessing insurance. So it became quite clear in sort of 2010, 2011, that people with medical conditions didn't always find their way to a suitable specialist broker such as yourselves. So we had discussions with Treasury, with the Government Equalities Office, with the ABI, the Insurer Trade Body, and said, look, why don't we mirror what we've done with the signposting service that we've had for older people, but also apply it to people that are had with medical conditions as well. So what that means is, if broker A can't insure that person because of their medical conditions, that they signpost it to another broker or insurer that they know can help them. Or if they're not sure, then they just give it to a neutral find insurance service, basically. The FCA call it, they say you have to meet the criteria of a medical cover firm directory. So and Bieber runs one of those. There's only two. The other one is the Money and Pension Service. So in April 2021, the FCA introduced ICOB, the Insurance Conduct of Business Sourcebook Rule 6A.4. And that was basically, introducing formal signposting as an FCA rule to the industry on medical travel, which is a really big deal because that was never an FCA rule on any of the other signposting agreements. But it's been effective. And you asked for some stats. So in April 2021, when we first launched it, we had 1,695 inquiries that month. In May 2025, our most recent statistic, we had 12,478 inquiries. So that is a sevenfold increase in the number of inquiries. We've helped over 272,000 people since it launched 4 years ago. And we're now running at least 120,000 travel medical inquiries a year. So it works beautifully. We can do more. I think as awareness improves, more people signpost to us, then we're keen to do as much as we can to help. So we're kind of like a dating agency at Bieber. We match that client with their requirements to the brokers that we know that can help. And I think we've screened something like 31 vetted specialist travel brokers. So some might be more expert on a particular cancer or something else. And we try and make sure that we help that client as much as possible to find that ultimate policy. It means that they can go on that holiday. And we've got some wonderful case studies that I think bring to life the importance of this. So we had the Liversidge family as this lovely family. I went up to see them in Yorkshire for the day. So Jason Liversidge, he has Fabry disease and motor neurone disease, both life limiting. And they had two young daughters. And with MND, you deteriorate over time. And he really wanted to have that holiday in Disneyland in America with these two little girls. And he couldn't find cover anywhere. And so they couldn't have the holiday, or they would have to run the risk of him going uninsured and facing, you know, a medical bill if something went wrong that would take away their home. But there was a regional broker, Greg Broadhurst, I remember him, and he signposted them to us, and we were able to find a broker that could get them that cover. They had that sort of last trip that he was able to travel on to Disneyland with those little girls. They sent us all the photos, and honestly, that's what we do. That's why we're here. And there was another nice story. I'll just give you one more. There was a young man, and he was disabled. He was in a wheelchair, and he learned to play that wheelchair basketball, what they call murder ball. So it's pretty aggressive sport. You see it in the Paralympics. And he wanted to get travel insurance, but it was really challenging because it was professional sport, being murder ball. He had his disability, of course. This was overseas, so he was called up to play nationally and to play overseas in Italy. I think he got a contract with an Italian team, and it was long term as well. So all those four reasons make it pretty hard to get travel cover. But again, they came to us, and we were able to find an insurance broker that could help, and he could live his dream of competing. So what we do is so much more than just provide a travel policy. It's helping people achieve what they want in their life, their aims, their dreams, with their family or their career. And, you know, I think what we do is hugely important.
Yeah, but, you know, perhaps there needs to be more case studies, more awareness of some of these great stories. But I'm particularly picking up on the point you made there about the Liversidge family and the fact that, in theory, if they couldn't travel with travel insurance to America, you know, ultimately, if there was a problem, that the amount of the cost runs into hundreds of thousands of pounds. And some of it, again, our research, coming back to our research, telling us that 45% of those people surveyed thought they could cover the cost if something went wrong in the States. And that's an alarming decision, an outcome that people think that.
It's a very worrying stat, isn't it, that, you know, around half of people think everything will be fine and they'll be able to afford it. Travel insurance costs in America are off the scale. It is literally, you know, six figures. I think we were discussing, there was, you know, just for an ambulance to be called, that can be over $4,000 just to pick you up.
Well, that was for a 15-minute ride. It wasn't
exactly
like it's a...
Yeah. So absolutely, you know, we need to get the message out there that some countries more than others. But I'm very aware that in your research, I think it was something like 23% of people weren't buying cover for short trips to Spain. But Spanish hospitals, you get the state ones, but you also get the private ones. Yeah. And that's probably the ones the ambulance is going to take you to. And that cost can be astronomical as well. So I think we see young people going on, you know, a week's trip in the summer to Spain, somewhere like that, and thinking, oh, maybe I've got a global health insurance card. I won't need to have travel insurance. I'll be absolutely fine. But the GHIC, as we call it, is absolutely no substitute. So anybody listening to this who thinks, don't worry, I've got the GHIC, that I isn't proper insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get cancellation cover. You don't get baggage cover. You get some cover in some countries, but you'll probably still have to pay some yourselves. And if you're taken to a private hospital, well, that's going to be a complication. So really don't rely on that GHIC. You absolutely have to have your travel insurance policy. And as I say, it covers like 20 odd different heads of cover, you know, public liability cover if you injure somebody else, whatever that scenario. But travel policies cover millions of pounds of medical expenses, and that's what you're going to need to protect your own financial interests, but to get that urgent, quick medical help that you want.
Yeah, one of the other things GHIC doesn't cover, of course, is repatriation.
Yes.
And some of the bigger claims I've seen in more recent times have involved air ambulances back to the UK from a variety of destinations. So again, that reiterates your point, Graham. I think that we also see, for example, that Spain being the most popular destination for Brits to travel to.
Yeah.
So it's obviously an alarm to anyone who thinks that they can travel to Spain and that they'd be fully covered by the GHIC, which we know that they're not. But also we see that Spain is the average claim value from our own data tells us that Spain's twice as expensive as Portugal, which I think kind of reiterates. Yeah. You know, they're next door neighbours. They're both in the EU, and you kind of think there shouldn't be any discrepancy. Why is that? And you kind of reiterate your point that you know, more people seem to end up in private hospitals in Spain than they do in Portugal. So you know, people need to be aware of that as well. That many times, sort of, if you buy a cheapest chips policy, you're not going to get covered for private medical facilities, for example.
So it's just really important, isn't it, to speak to your insurance broker, make sure you've got the right cover. And travel insurance is, I think, is great value for money, what you get for it.
Well, we get so much focus on cost, but if we've already mentioned the emotive case study for the Liversidge family, but, you know, there's a cost there to the family, which thankfully we were able to get them covered, but you can't put a value on that experience that person had that knows that they won't be able to do that for, if at all, again, you know, the memories made on that holiday. So, you know, I'm like you. I mean, the number of times that you feel empowered by the fact that you've been able to cover. And we get messages all the time from people saying that, you know, well, I didn't think I'd ever get cover and be able to go on this holiday. Many, many times we get people phoning us up before they actually book a holiday to make sure that they can get cover first. So, you know, I do feel very strongly that we provide a great product, great value. Yes, admittedly, there's a cost, but hopefully as we go through the podcast series, people start to understand a lot more about the cost and the equation that sits there behind there when you see some of the claim sizes that we do. And as we're seeing these increasingly large claims come in, not just from the States, but from other countries as well, Far East, coming in quite chunky now, particularly Thailand, for example, where a lot of Brits head off, we're starting to see this alarming trend of people under declaring medical conditions, because that will get into an ambiguity situation when it comes to a claim. And you've already touched on the subject that non-disclosure, particularly where it's quite a serious medical condition or medications missed off, which is for a quite significant health issue. If those sort of things are missed off, then you're going to get ambiguity. There's going to be some investigation, all of which will delay claims being paid. You any kind of insight or thoughts into kind of what's going on there, why people would do that?
I think perhaps, you know, some people don't realise the importance of disclosure. I mean, what we know is that the vast majority of claims are for medical costs. It's not your lost passport or something like that. The big bill for the insurance industry from travel is medical. So I think some people, you know, they generally won't remember what they've had when, which is why I say the NHS app is my cheat to do that. But people might also think, well, maybe I just can't get cover. If I open up about this stuff, I'm not going to insure me, so maybe I'll just stay quiet. Or other people might think, oh, it's going to really put the price up and I don't want to have to pay significantly more. I'll just try and get some cheap cover and I'm sure I'll be fine. But they don't appreciate it could completely invalidate their policy if they don't come on open terms with all their medical points to start with. And I think, look, an insurance contracts are based on trust. We don't know that person. We rely on them to tell us what their risk factors are. And then we underwrite that and we give a risk reflective premium for them. And, you know, some products will be more competitive than others. Some insurers will have a greater appetite for certain things. They'll have more knowledge, different medical staff who have a greater understanding. So yes, I think sometimes clients may unwittingly not disclose something, or there may be some that fear the full disclosure, that it might mean they can't have that cover for their trip or might not be able to afford it. But that's why we have our travel medical directory. That's why we have specialist insurance brokers. And there are so many stories when actually, you know, whatever it be, maybe it's diabetes or something, there's very little effect on the product, the premium, and you can absolutely go on that trip. So I think the advice to clients is don't fear us, come and talk to us, and we're going to do our very best to get you as competitive policy to cover the needs that you have, so you can have that trip.
So some of the more interesting stuff that comes out is that people have got a misconception that actually, regardless, that an insurer will pay out and they might tell them off for forgetting certain detail on the thing, which we know is not the case. They also think that the insurance company might lend them money and they might have to pay it back later. But again, we know that's not the case. And what people's perception of what an insurer will do and what they won't do. You got any?
Yeah, I mean, we need to bust those myths, right?
This is hopefully one way of doing it.
If you didn't disclose and tell the truth about your medical conditions, you're not necessarily going to get a loan from your insurer to pay medical bills or anything else. If you're fundamentally not being honest, then it's unlikely that claim is valid. So it just comes back to that point about making sure you disclose all of the scenarios. And it's not just medical, it's also things like hazardous pursuits. So you might want to go horse riding, you might want to go hang gliding, bungee jumping, like you do all the time, Gary. So some of those things are absolutely fine. No loading, but just tell us about it, because some insurers will have a different approach. Some will care and they will want to charge more, or they might not want to do it, but others will just actually take it in their stride and say, thanks for telling us, you're absolutely fine to do that. So with all things, whether it's a hazardous sport, a medical condition, just talk to us. That's why we're here, to help you and get you a really comprehensive coverage.
Yeah, we do see, particularly again in the Far East, some particularly issues around scooters and people riding without crash helmets. And if anyone's been to Thailand or Vietnam and seen the kind of general chaos that there is on their roads anyway, you can see why, A, people do have problems, but then you see people riding on flip-flops and in flip-flops, sometimes in tropical downpours, not wearing helmets. You can understand to a certain extent, because it's hot and humid out there and it must be horrible wearing a helmet in those sort of conditions. But again, people need to be aware that basically the conditions are the same as if they are at home, i.e. if you're on a motorbike, you need to be wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
And if you have unfortunately fall off, as we see an awful lot, unfortunately, and you do fall off and you hit your head and you're not wearing a helmet, you know, that can really invalidate your insurance. So just a sort of general warning out there for people that need to think before they act and understand some of the ramifications. None of us want to think that way. None of us think that's going to happen. We're also seeing incidents like quad bikes as well become increasingly a problem on the same sort of subject. So, you know, there are things. We don't want to sound like killjoys here, because everyone's, you know, wants to go off on holiday and have a great time. And, these are some of the things that just people need to be aware of, you know, particularly when it comes to travel insurance. But, the type of holiday that we all want to enjoy, I know that your particular interest sets are around motorsport and particular space. And at your first Biba conference last year as CEO. You were delighted to welcome a very special guest there.
Yeah, we had Tim Peake, the British astronaut, who was the first British astronaut to do a spacewalk as well. I think he's one of the most motivational people I've ever met in my life. He goes into schools, he oozes enthusiasm, and he tells the story of how he didn't do very well in school himself. But actually, you know, he's made the best of the opportunities that he's had. He's applied himself, he's worked hard, and what an achievement. And I think he told this story about how when he came back to Earth, he went to Buckingham Palace and he had this little furled up Union Jack in his spacesuit, and he gave it to the Queen. I mean, you can't get much better than that, can you?
You know, coming back to Tim a second there, and was Bieber able to broker a deal for him to cover him for his spacewalk and his space travel? Well, what's the script with insuring somebody who's out of space?
We do have inquiries about space risks, and Tim is heading up like the UK. Is it the Artemis project? I think he's very involved in that. And so, yeah, look, the vast majority of risks go through Bieber insurance brokers, particularly those kinds of risks. So we're always happy to talk to him or anyone else about their insurance coverage. And we've had, I probably shouldn't say the names, but several BBC presenters who come to talk to us about I'll tell you this story. So it was Angela Rippon, and she came as a story about Rip Off Britain and how travel insurance, you know, wasn't great value for money, and did it really pay claims? And it was quite a negative story. And I thought, well, that's not reflective of the truth. So I went through a policy wording with her in my office saying, no, it covers this, it covers that. This is how it works. You get all of this. And it, you know, costs like £30, I think it was, for a trip. Or you can do an annual one. You can go on as many holidays as you like. And by the end of it, the whole storyline completely changed, and she was able to tell the story of why travel insurance was as important as your passport, or as I always say, as important as your suitcase going on holiday, and you know, all the different covers that you get, and the importance of buying it from an insurance broker to make sure you have talked about your hazardous activities, your winter sports, you know, the things that you really need. If you're going on a cruise, do you need a specialist cruise policy? So she really understood it. And then the piece that she did was, you know, really supporting the policy and buying from a broker. And then the icing on the cake was the next day she phoned up to buy a travel insurance policy from Bieber brokers. So I think we have to keep telling these stories about how it does help ultimately people appreciate the importance of getting that cover. But we do want to reduce the number of people that perhaps aren't getting cover, or they're not disclosing things and claims might not be paid because of a non-disclosure. So we work with the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office. They have their Travel Aware campaign. I think about 15% of travellers don't have travel insurance. So 85% of people going on holiday buy cover and are protected, but 15% don't. But yeah, I hope it will work. And to your point about motorsport, I do tend to like to go to Le Mans camping with some other brokers and friends, the 24-hour race in France. And so, yeah, definitely important to get insurance for that trip, for sure.
Is that including going round Le Mans?
Only as a spectator. No, I've never been round. And the only time I did drive around a racetrack once. It was my 40th birthday. And my present was one of those motorsport days, right, where you get to drive around it. And I got to drive around in a touring car. And you go round with like an instructor, a professional racing driver, and they tell you where your apex points are, where to accelerate, brake, and all the rest of it. And so I was going round Brands Hatch, and then he said, okay, right now you're going to really go for it. So we came round any one of those Brands Hatch clearways curve onto the Brabham Straight, and it had one of these semi-automatic gearbox with the flappy paddles when they were quite new then. And he went, right, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, and I was like, this is good. And he went seventh, and I looked at him and went, seventh? I didn't even know there was a seventh gear back in the day. And I missed the flappy paddle and I hit the windscreen washers. So there I was, like, you know, 100 odd miles an hour, heading towards Paddock Hill Bend, which is a sheer drop round to the right where most people normally crash. And all of a sudden, my windscreen was obliterated with all of the washer liquid. And I was trying to find where the windscreen wiper was as this instructor was sort of yelling at me. I probably need insurance for that too.
Yeah.
So. But I did survive. Well,
thankfully, you're here to tell the tale on that one. But so it sounds like you love travelling to Le Mans. And speaking earlier, I mean, where is a perfect ideal family destination for the Trug Gills?
Well, we had a nice family holiday. Just the summer holidays just gone. I live right in Kent, so it's easy to get across on the Channel Tunnel to France, and it's such a beautiful country. So we drove down to Versailles, and we then we sort of stayed like in an Airbnb thing. We took a train and we got to see the athletics at the Olympic Games, which was amazing for a day. And then we took a day into Paris, and we went up to Montmartre and the Sacré-Cœur. We went to the artist square there, and there was this really old artist doing this oil painting of this beautiful square with the restaurants and the Sacré-Cœur in the background. And we sort of thought, actually, you know what, we're going to have to get one of his paintings. And so we bought the painting from him, and we had a lovely chat with him. But because it's an oil painting, he had to like staple it all down with all the boards, because you can't even open it for a month. So we had to sort of take it away and be careful for the rest of the day. And then on the way home, we stopped at Monet's garden, and we saw the garden as it's been for 100 years. So that, you know, the impressionist artist. So all of the lily pond, the nymphs, that little green bridge, as you see in the famous paintings, his house preserved for over 100 years, the rose garden, all of that. So I've got 4 kids. So I was able to give them an art lesson at the same time. We bought some art. We also visited the Museum d'Orsay as well. So it was a lovely holiday, a mixture of the Olympic Games, seeing some art, getting some art. It was a really lovely trip. So that, I think for me, that was a nice, fun and relaxing holiday.
And you also had your travel insurance in tow as well. No,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Wouldn't go anywhere without it.
Graham, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Your energy and enthusiasm, the level of knowledge that you've got. I couldn't think of a better person to have on our first All Clear to Travel podcast. So thank you so much for such valuable insights, and keep banging the drum for insurance generally, but obviously from our perspective, from travel insurance in specifically. So
thanks.
You very much.
Great to have such a long-term relationship, and great to see all the work that you do.
Yeah, Bieber's been a great partner for us as well. So mutual admiration and respect, and thank you once again.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.